It's time for the Kick Around, the Ticket's weekly show all about soccer. 2 hours of HSOs on the clubs, leagues, and tournaments of the world's game. It doesn't matter if you're new to the sport, don't worry. This is the Ticket. We're just kicking it around. Always relegated, never promoted. Andy Swift and Peter Welpton.
Harrison piling in, and it is! They don't need any help now! By the aid of a deflection, Jack Harrison has surely saved Leeds! Jesse Marsh, in a mixture of delight and relief, it looks very much as though he has kept them up.
Hada-ho, P1s, and welcome to a special noon edition of the Kick Around. Saturdays, typically 2 to 4 here on the Ticket. Who knows if that'll ever happen again. Were you the good P1, sits around, talks soccer, and all that implies? Hi, it's me, Peter. Don't forget, you can find us on our website, thekickaround.com. And here inside this absolute temple of broadcasting excellence is noted soccer expert Andy Swift.
Peter, how are you on this glorious, glorious day for soccer?
Happy Soccer Super Bowl Saturday
because
to you, sir.
Today is really a special day.
It is a special day. Today, it is the Champions League final, 2 p.m. on Big Boy CBS. A little team called Real Madrid versus the juggernaut known as Liverpool.
I know that for you, Man United supporter, and for Sam, Everton supporter, this is a big day because you get to root for the most successful team in the history of soccer.
Liverpool was playing like doo-doo. Real Madrid.
I am not rooting for one or the other, Andy. Okay. I am rooting for a fantastic 2 hours, maybe a little more than 2 hours, potentially. Mm-hmm. Maybe 120 minutes plus penalty kicks kind of result.
Okay.
I love the drama, my friend. Live from Paris. You're all nervous. I could just, you're tense.
No, relaxed.
Well, here's how the show's going to go down today, because we were very lucky that the Sorois were traveling. And this slot was open because it dawned on me many days ago that we may have to do the Kick Around while the Champions League final was going on, because historically we've been hosting a watching party. We've done that at the factory several times, and that's always been a blast. But because they have a musical engagement, a band playing there or a festival or something going on today, they didn't do it this time. So we were faced with having to try to do a Kick Around while the Champions League final was going on, and I thought, well, that's just a waste of everybody's time. So this works out great. We will spend the second hour of the show doing nothing but previewing Real Madrid versus Liverpool. But first, it is now our opportunity. Andy, I haven't seen you in several weeks.
I know. Where have you been?
I was traveling. You were doing Hall of Fame stuff last week. The good Tyler Kern was sitting in for us. We do need to spend some time talking about how the Premier League season wrapped up. And when we went into last Sunday, where all the games happened at the same time, I was a little bummed out because the one game I thought that was really going to bring us all the drama, the Arsenal-Everton game, all of that excitement got sucked out of the room because Everton had saved their skin earlier in the week. Yeah. Little did I know that the drama would still come down to City playing their game against Aston Villa and Liverpool playing their game against, who was it you guys were playing? Wolves.
Yeah. So, first of all, the fact that Liverpool was able to take it to the last weekend was an achievement considering where things stood 6 months ago, right?
What do you mean 6 months ago?
In terms of the table, where Liverpool stood and how far behind they were, behind City they were.
How far? I don't remember.
It was 12, 13 points. You had written them off.
Yeah.
Right? And I had to insist.
Oh, yeah. This is back when you were doing Liverpool math.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it came down to the last weekend. And it really did come down to the last weekend. I mean, very much so.
So how much of Liverpool's now 2X of losing the Premier League by a single point to Man City do you put down to A, Man City's excellence, or B, the fact that when you look at Liverpool's season against the other top four teams, you got six draws and no shutouts.
Yeah. Hold on. Liverpool is about to play their 63rd game today.
Oh my God. Here we go.
They've lost three of them. Two in the Premier League. This is a great season. Don't like, oh, if this would have happened. That City's a great side.
Okay.
So, you know, the fact that Liverpool was able to get within a point.
As last Sunday's playing out, and it looks like City may bonk this and hand it to Liverpool. When it turned out that, in fact, City does what City does and City ends up winning it, you weren't that disappointed because it was an excellent season after all.
I was not disappointed heading into the final day because I didn't expect City to have trouble against Villa. And I fully expected City to come out, get an early lead, and then, you know, okay, it'll play out like it's going to play out. The fact that hope was given to me.
and then pulled away.
Yeah, it kind of just made it.
If you didn't get to watch, the scenes last week were crazy because City did exactly the opposite of what everybody thought would happen. They went down at home to Aston Villa, a team that isn't exactly known for their away performances this season.
Performances, period.
Well, okay, yeah, sure. We'll talk about Villa here in a little bit. And they didn't just score a goal to take the lead. They took a 2-0 lead.
Yeah, Coutinho scored the second goal. Stevie Gerrard is leading Villa. You know, he's the manager. I mean, the storyline is just creating itself. The issue on the other side, because, you know, both games were being played at the same time, is that Liverpool needed to win their game, and they were drawing with Wolves. It was 1-1.
Correct. Right. Yes.
So when it was 2-0, Liverpool, then all they had to do was score a goal. And if Villa was able to keep that lead or even be tied.
Right.
Liverpool would have won the Premier League title.
Yes. And we're now back into the quadruple conversation, which is the never done before winning the quadruple.
Right.
The Premier League, Champions League, right. Leagues Cup, and FA Cup.
So at the 75th minute of both games, it is 0-2 City.
Yep.
1-1 Liverpool. And Liverpool is peppering the Wolves goal.
Yes.
You were watching, right?
I was watching both of them.
Liverpool, it was only a matter of time.
It did feel like the thing that nobody thought was going to happen was going to happen, which City was going to blow it. And then I have to say, look, my team considers City and Liverpool as nemesis A1A and 1B, okay? But I have to give full credit to City because what then transpired over the course of what felt like 3 seconds.
Wait. Okay, so it's the 75th.
Okay.
76th minute. They score a goal.
They score a goal.
And it's 2-1.
Yes.
Liverpool continues to
still
1-1,
right?
So we're still feeling good. You can even concede another goal on the other side.
Sure, because really, for City to get back into this, they can't draw. They've got to score two more goals.
Right. 78th minute. 2 minutes later, they tie it.
City does. Yes. Now it's 2-2
and 1-1
and 1-1.
Liverpool continues
still
to pepper.
Okay.
They're peppering that goal.
Yes.
They're gonna get that goal.
Yes.
3 minutes later, City scores the third goal. In a span of 5 minutes, they score three goals.
Let me just, before you move on, I just want to say that 5 minute span where you watched one of the greatest teams of this sport suddenly all look at each other and went, oh, hell no, and just turned it on. They literally flipped a switch. And just said, we are not going to lose this.
Starting with the MVP of the Premier League this season. He was the one.
That was one of the most impressive performances of just, we're not going to let this happen I've ever seen in any sport. That was amazing.
But De Bruyne also, he even a step above that.
All of them. Yeah. Gundogan, all of them. Pep, all of it was just, that was an amazing 5-6 minutes of sport.
So 2 minutes later, 3 minutes later, Liverpool finally gets that goal. The crowd at Anfield was silent. They scored the goal
until somebody on social media trolled Anfield by tweeting out or putting something somewhere that indicated that Villa had scored a third goal to bring it to 3-3, and Anfield went bonkers.
Right. The players are looking around, what just happened?
Not knowing that they had just been trolled.
Yeah. Liverpool went on to score a third goal, just for good measure.
And ended up winning 3-1.
But it was...
was not, because Villa actually did not score a third goal.
Yeah.
City held on, won the game 3-2,
yeah,
and the Premiership title.
So,
fourth in 5 years, by the way.
It was, yeah, and it was difficult as a Liverpool supporter to live through that, even though you went into that game thinking the outcome was going to be what it ended up being,
mm-hmm,
because hopes had been raised. But upon further reflection, after the game, after it was all said and done, within the next 24, 48 hours, you look back and, as a Liverpool supporter, all other supporters are already thinking this. City, they're just a phenomenal team.
Yeah.
They're just a phenomenal
team. Isn't there a basketball analogy about NBA teams that talk about how good their team was? They just were unfortunate to play in the era of Jordan
or something like that.
I'm sure Liverpool fans feel that way. They're just, the Liverpool club has been so good. The fact that you've only won the Premier League once is completely tied to the fact that City is just that much of a smidge better club.
4 out of 5, full credit to Pep, his team, his squad. He's putting it together. They have, you know, bottomless pit of money, and we have to acknowledge that.
Sure.
That they're run by a nation state, and it sounds like sour grapes, but it's the truth, right?
It is. In fact, there's an odd place for this. There was a great article in the Financial Times that we tweeted out earlier today that talks about how the growing disparity in the sport of soccer is just, it's happening at an exponential rate. The clubs that have all of the money versus the ones that don't are now really starting to just kind of close up shop in terms of who's winning the leagues, mm-hmm, and the tournaments. And domestic tournaments and continental tournaments and domestic leagues. And it's an interesting story. And as I said a year ago, I don't think the Super League was a bad idea. I just think it was badly executed.
Poorly rolled out,
poorly executed. Yeah. But I do think the problem of the differences between the cities and the Real Madrids and the Southamptons of the world is largely found in clubs being able to go do their own thing in their own league and spend as much as they want in a closed system, and everybody else work in a salary cap system.
Yeah. Now, if you can look at the Bundesliga, where they've tried to really fix that and they're really good about it, and Bayern has won 10 straight years.
Yeah. That's why I think the solution only comes by allowing the clubs with all the money to go just
play in their own
sandbox, right?
Yep.
And let everybody else live in a different world. That's what I believe.
Okay.
City, look, it's a great season for both of those clubs. As a neutral, somewhat of a neutral, it is funny to me. I do find great glee in the fact that the two teams keep, like, if Liverpool wins Champions League today, that is going to be an amazing accomplishment. But I very much understand that City fans really want to win Champions League and Liverpool fans really want to win another Premier League. Mm-hmm. And if you gave them the opportunity to swap places, I think most of them would.
Yeah, Champions League is pretty special. I would think that
Liverpool's won so many Champions League trophies over the years.
Yeah.
You've just only won one Premier League trophy.
I think this is especially true for both managers. I think
I agree.
Pep really wants that Champions League with City. And I think Klopp wants one more Premier League title with Liverpool.
Yeah.
And that's why he extended.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
I agree.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating set of side stories. We'll talk lots about the Champions League final at the top of the next hour. We'll spend the entire second hour of the show just talking about the Champions League final, Real Madrid-Liverpool, on Channel 11 at 2 p.m. today. It's going to be a fantastic game. I keep saying, which means it's going to turn up being a turd.
No, I have a good feeling about this.
Do you?
Yeah, about it being a good game.
If you just look at it on paper, there are so many little storylines that add up to just the potential of this being an all-time great final. But you know how that plays out. So congratulations to Pep Guardiola, Man City, for winning their fourth Premier League in 5 seasons. Liverpool, again, by just a mere point. That is hard to believe, and that's got to be a tough nut to swallow.
I am horny.
Yes, I am. Always. All right. When we come back, when we come back, we'll talk about how the relegation situation played out and all other parts of the Premier League, and we'll do that next here on the Kick Around. It is Soccer Super Bowl Saturday. The big game is at 2 p.m. on CBS, and we'll get to talking about Liverpool, Real Madrid in great detail at the top of the next hour, so stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, here on the Kick Around with Andy and myself, Peter, we are catching up and reviewing on last season's Premier League results. The season did wrap up. We said City are champions, Liverpool second by a mere point once again. Again, condolences, Andy, but it was a lot of fun to watch.
It was. It was a good season. No, it was no issues.
A lot of fun. So now we need to get into the rest of the season. Thanks. Chelsea kind of goofed off into third place. The Chelsea season continues to be its own weird Netflix special.
Yeah, and I think that... Third place, certainly not disappointing if your club finishes top four and gets in the Champions League next year. But I think for Chelsea, it was a little bit of a disappointing finish, right? And you and I had picked them to win it. Sam did too.
Oh, that's right. They were our...
Lars picked City.
I did too.
By the way, I don't know if... EA do the same thing?
I don't have EAs that pretty. So, you know, so for them to finish third, I think, ultimately, you can chalk that up to a bit of a disappointment.
Here's how bad Chelsea's season ended up. If you consider the form table of the last six games, Chelsea's form is 11th in the league.
Yeah.
The team immediately ahead of them in 10th?
Palace.
Everton.
Oh, my goodness. That is bad. Sorry, Sam, but, you know, like, man.
I'll take my victories where I can get them.
So Chelsea's form, though, I think they were affected a little bit by... They didn't finish third because of the news and the whole sale thing, but the form that he had at the end certainly affected.
I think you could probably chalk up the end of their season related to how, you know, not necessarily their place in the Premier League, but how they finished off the FA Cup, the Champions League, and some of this other stuff they were doing. You know, some of that kind of just overall end of the season degrade, I think part of it has to have had something to do with the drama going on behind the scenes.
That at the end, but it
and
is
the
not,
Lukaku thing.
Yeah, but it okay, but that's different then. So the drama of the sale affected the way they ended the season, but it is not why they finished third. Manchester City 93 points, Liverpool 92, Chelsea 74. There's a huge gap in points.
Oh sure.
So there were other issues that prevented Chelsea from really playing a bigger role in the race for the title.
Yeah, and that may get into the issues of Lukaku and the fact they spent an insane amount of money. I mean, I clearly remember at the beginning of the season sitting here in this room talking about how the addition of Lukaku and the way that he started Chelsea's season was like, dude, they are going to really make a race of this. And then it just like that interview happened and then the bottom fell out, at least for that aspect of it. And then, of course, all the other off the field drama happened.
I do think, though, and you were the one, I think you predicted this or you mentioned it sitting in that very chair, Peter, that before the season started, the Lukaku acquisition, you questioned it a little bit.
Well, I didn't understand how they were going to fit him into the team, and I was one of those people that largely believed the reason why Lukaku was playing well in Italy was because it was Italy and the differences between Serie A and the Premier League. I just remember all the things that drove me nuts about him when he was playing for my team,
right?
And I was very worried that we would see that again at Chelsea. And that's kind of what happened, where he didn't feel loved and he didn't get the attention he wanted and he wasn't getting the service he wanted. Yeah. And that just turned into a thing. So I think Chelsea are fine. Tuchel is a fantastic coach. They now have an ownership group that I don't think they will spend.
No.
Like Abramovich did.
Their goal is to be more like Liverpool, Arsenal in terms of how they spend money and less like the Chelsea of the past, obviously.
Well, I think what we've learned from Liverpool is you can be smart about how you spend your money and be completely okie dokie.
Yeah.
And I'm not worried about Liverpool. I mean, excuse me, Chelsea's future.
But it depends how good they're going to be about with that kind of model. So the battle for fourth, you call the Fruitcake Cup.
I did.
I called it the Great Pillow Fight for fourth place. Kind of the same thing, right?
Yeah.
And somebody, I think it was Kern, that pointed it out when I was on with him. He was when you were gone, and he's like, "Man, you guys are really demeaning how hard it is to finish in fourth place in the Premier League." And he's right about that. But I think the reason we kind of started making fun of it is because anytime a team got to fourth place and was theirs to lose, they would just kick it away and then
give
it to somebody else.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted to keep it.
Yeah. I got people were every time I would tweet about the Fruitcake Cup or call it an unwanted baked good, somebody would give me crap because they didn't understand the joke. Right.
Yeah.
And it was really just a reference to how people would get into fourth place and then lose their next game. And somebody, it was a revolving door. There was a great graph that showed how many teams over the course of the last like 10 weeks of the season swapped in and out of fourth place until Tottenham really grabbed it.
If you go back to the start of the season, United for a while, you know, they were like top four, right?
Mm-hmm. West Ham.
Then West Ham was like, oh man, are they going to finish top four? And then of course we got, you know, it was the Arsenals, the Uniteds, Wolves was making a Leicester was there for a while and nobody seemed to want it. Till Spurs got in. I think Spurs was ultimately deserving of the top four finish.
Yeah, and I think if you're a Spurs fan, you're feeling pretty good about where this team is. The Conte situation feels like he's getting what he wants. There was a big £150 million promise of income or influx in cash for spending. Some of the offseason or excuse me, midseason acquisitions that they picked up were huge components to their run at the end of the season that really reinforced what Conte probably is saying back in the front office is like, look, I told you to go out and get these guys. You did it. They cost you little to nothing to do it, or relatively.
Yeah.
And look how well it improved the team. Now, if you'll go out and do this, this, and this, I can take you to another level.
And he's decided to stay because that was the question.
Yeah.
So, and that means Arsenal finished fifth. Now, the question is that a good or bad end to the Arsenal? It's a bad end to the Arsenal season because they could have finished fourth. But overall, good season or bad for Arsenal?
Well, I can't remember. I seem to remember that I think I predicted Arsenal was going to be seventh or sixth or something. What did I predict?
You had them seventh.
Okay. So if they ended up in fifth, that's a good
but
season.
But Lars and I had them in fifth.
Okay.
Sam in sixth. So kind of like expected, maybe they outperformed your expectations.
All right, let's do this real quickly since you have the predictions in front of you. What did I predict 1 through 6?
You predicted that Chelsea would win, City would finish second, your United would be in third, and Liverpool fourth. Those were your four teams. After that, Spurs fifth, Leicester.
Okay, I had Leicester.
And
okay, and what about you?
And I had Chelsea winning like you, City in second like you, United and Liverpool third and fourth, just like you.
Okay.
Arsenal I had in fifth, Leicester in sixth, and West Ham in seventh, which is right, but I really flunked out on Spurs.
And Leicester.
Yeah, and Leicester. Yeah. I had Leicester basically.
And what was Lars' predictions?
City winning, Chelsea second, Liverpool third, United fourth. So we had the same top four. He had Arsenal fifth, then Spurs. So Arsenal and Spurs flipped.
Right.
And then Leicester.
Okay.
So he was a little bit closer than anybody. Sam had Aston Villa finishing fourth, by the way, and Liverpool seventh. I just wanted to point that out.
Well, if you go back
$40 too.
If you go back and look at a lot of predictions, I think there are a lot more people that had Chelsea winning the Premier League this year. Mm-hmm. And so there is a reason to spend a lot of time trying to deconstruct what happened at Chelsea because a lot of people predicted they were going to win. You and I did. Lars did. I mean, there's a ton of people that favored them.
So maybe that was the biggest disappointment other than United.
I think United is the one that really threw everybody for a loop.
Top four was a must for them, and they should have.
It's really funny because when you go back and read any random kind of football experts review, and they all went, yeah, we really thought, how did we get United so wrong? It was so clear that this was nothing but a train wreck about to happen.
Quick guess, how many points off fourth did United finish?
Oh,
13.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
It's a huge.
That's a lot.
It's a huge gap. And the crazy part is they lose their last game of the season and they still retained sixth place because West Ham couldn't do their business and overcome them. So I am now not going to get to enjoy. It was funny because as I was watching them lose, I looked up the European Conference League
teams
that had qualified so far. And I'm telling you, of all the clubs and nations mm-hmm. that are going to be playing in that tournament, I guarantee you I'd never heard of 85% of them.
You would have learned some geography.
It would have been like a social studies trip. It would have been great.
Is this the most disappointing, in a way, or toughest season for you as a supporter, as a United supporter, to have watched? Just because of everything?
Yeah, because everything just felt like it was always, and like when they fired Solskjaer and they brought in Ragnick, no matter if he did well or not, you just never got the sense he wanted to be the manager full time and they were going to switch to somebody new for next season, which then clearly painted everything as, well, this is never going to go well because nobody's going to want to get invested with a guy that they're not going to be playing for next
year. And I've just never seen a United side, players wearing that crest, just, I don't want to say not given a flip.
They didn't.
But it just seemed like it. I mean, it's hard to say.
We could spend an entire show just talking about the ridiculousness of the Manchester United situation. And I have no idea how long it's going to take to get corrected. I'm excited as a fan that Ten Hag is the manager. I just don't know if that ever gets resolved or not. I honestly do not know. And I guess we'll find out here in short order. And I get to enjoy more Europa League Thursdays and Sunday games. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, we will, I promise, get to what happened in the drama of relegation next here on the Kick Around. Liverpool, Madrid happening in just a little over an hour, and we will spend the second hour of the Kick Around exclusively on the Champions League finals, so stay tuned for that, kids. First, Andy, just real quick.
Yeah.
We don't typically talk about non-league English football, but I do because it's tied to the great Hollywood star Ryan Reynolds.
The best.
If you didn't know, Ryan and a friend, a comedian Rob McElhaney, bought the Welsh team Wrexham, and they have made all sorts of big moves about bringing in players from professional, and so they made a run, and they've had a pretty rough introduction into English football over the last week or so. So they lost the FA Trophy final last week at Wembley, and that broke their hearts.
Yeah.
But earlier today in their National League playoff, meaning this is like the fifth tier of English soccer, the winner of this would go to the final, and the final would then get promoted to League Two, which is official EFL soccer over in
fourth level.
Well, unfortunately, playing against Grimsby, the mighty Grimsby, the Mariners, it went to extra time.
Mm.
And just about when you thought it was going to go to penalty kicks, they gave up a header in the 119th minute to get knocked out and will remain in the National League in the next season.
That's like staying in rookie ball. You can't move up to single A baseball. Was he there? Because he was there.
They're there. They've been hanging out. Yeah. The cameras are constantly showing them looked excited or dejected.
Can't wait till they need to bring that team up.
Well, I'm sure this is going to turn in. I'm sure they're filming all of this for some sort of special, and it should be great. But if you're going to go into the world of ownership of a tiny English or Welsh soccer team, this is a really hard introduction for both those guys.
You and I, remember we looked into buying a team way back in the day.
We tried to buy Blackpool, but
you know what we would have done?
Couldn't get the financing.
I would have made sure our set pieces were like, like spot on. Real quick, before we get into relegation, I had this question for you. Man City, more than any other team, scored more goals from set pieces than any other team in the Premier League this year. I mean, and look, they won by a point. And a lot of those games, you know, the goal difference was... Set pieces was key to City winning. Liverpool was second in set piece scoring. Third, Brentford, and that was the reputation they had going up, that they were really good at that because of metrics. Last, Norwich, Watford, two relegated teams.
Mm-hmm.
Who was third to last?
Oh, I'm sure it was Manchester United.
Yes, sir.
By the way, we talked about this on the show at the time where I celebrated a day not too long ago where United scored on their first header in like 139 attempts, which was unheard of. They had literally gone I think, 139 consecutive corner kicks without scoring.
That's terrible.
Which is just awful. Yes, awful, awful. All right, we've been talking about the end of the Premier League season and where the top of the table went. We will now turn our focus to the bottom of the Premier League. And we talked earlier about how Sam's Everton rescued themselves earlier in the week, so the Everton-Arsenal game no longer
played. I was really hoping.
Yeah. So it really came down to Leeds playing their game and Burnley playing their game.
Right.
Who, you know.
And Burnley had the advantage of having a significantly better goal difference. So goal difference wasn't going to factor in. Burnley just needed to tie Leeds in points, or Leeds had to outpace Burnley in points to save themselves.
Burnley was playing Newcastle, which is a really great and fun story to talk about. Leeds was playing the aforementioned Cinderella story of the season, Brentford. Now, we know Jesse Marsh is the guy that had to replace the man. He was the guy they hired to replace Bielsa, and I'm not a big fan of being the guy that replaces the guy that never generally tends to work out well.
Mm-hmm.
But the scenes for Leeds, when they finally sewed it up and ended up rescuing themselves and staying in the Premiership, yeah, were some of the greatest, most emotional scenes you will see in some time.
And it was going to be difficult because Leeds was playing on the road against Brentford, not a bad side, middle of the table side. And Burnley had a home match against Newcastle, much improved.
But Newcastle really had nothing to play for.
Right, exactly. And Burnley really just needed to outpace by a point Leeds. But Leeds ended up winning their game. Burnley lost theirs. So Jesse Marsh mission accomplished, right? But what? Mission accomplished.
Yes.
He had to save them. But this is the thing. When he took over the club, not a lot of people know this, they were in the relegation zone. They were already in the relegation zone.
Yeah.
He did save them.
Yeah.
And they were vastly improved in goal difference. They're vastly improved in points per game and XG and all those metrics. He really did turn them around a little bit. You're looking at me like I'm nuts.
Oh,
he did. The numbers prove it out.
No, he did. I continue.
Or he stopped the bleeding, I guess.
I continue to laugh at the Ted Lasso element to the whole Jesse Marsh thing, because I do feel like it was really unfair for the English or the European media to consistently criticize him as some sort of Ted Lasso thing. But here's the problem. Every time a game ends, they put the camera in front of Jesse Marsh, and it was specifically demonstrated in the aftermath of this victory, where he gives one of those very Ted Lasso-esque speeches, and you can't just help and laugh and wonder, what would Jesse look like with a really nice mustache? Seriously.
Maybe he should do it just to...
He should.
Yeah,
it would be a fantastic troll on Jesse Marsh's part if he showed up at the beginning of next season with a Ted Lasso mustache.
Look,
that would be hilarious.
Kudos to him. He's going to get to guide the team now for a full season, or start at least the season.
At least start it, right.
But I do want to point something out about Leeds. I'm going to show you this graph. You can explain it on air because you're really good about verbalizing what you're seeing with your eyes. This is pressure. Pressure applied by teams.
Oh, like pressing.
Pressing.
Yeah, pressing in an opponent's defending third. Yeah.
Leeds the rest of the
table. So it's one of those graphs where it's a big square and it's an XY axis and Leeds is way off.
So far off.
Do you also realize that that Leeds had, I think I may be wrong about this, the number of yellow cards Leeds had this season set a record, I believe, for a Premier League season.
And fouls committed.
And I think they had two times as many yellow cards as the next team.
Also committed a lot of fouls.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Running intensity is really what that is. But So, man, that team. But he's going to tweak that. I don't think he's going to be quite the extremist that Bielsa was in that regard.
Yeah, my concern for them is they're likely to lose Rafinha. There's a whole talk about him going to Barcelona. There are elements to that team that are critical. Calvin Phillips. There are a lot of people that think he may go to United. I don't think that happens just because of the history between Leeds and United, but that's the kind of guy United needs. It's going to come down to Victor Orta, their technical director, sporting director's ability to put another team together for Jesse. Yeah. But watching an American like Jesse, we all think he's the best American coach out there. Yeah. Really give it a good shout and run in the Premier League is something we all look forward to.
And they just got Brendan Aaronson. $30 million.
And they just signed Brendan Aaronson, which is another thing. And then there's a lot of rumors that they're also talking about Tyler Adams, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's some talk about Tyler.
Red Bull product as well.
Which would be fantastic. Yeah. Now, for Burnley, our former board op, Josh.
Sorry, Josh.
They got rid of Sean Dyche. They look like for a minute there they might screw it together and save themselves, but it eventually just kind of collapsed in. Burnley now is in a real pickle because of the money situation when they got sold. Now the team has a ton of debt, and how this plays out, there are a lot of really serious concerns that Burnley isn't a team that rebounds back into the Premiership, but may end up being kind of the next Sunderland-type team, or team that falls out of the Premier League, and because of the financial situation, just starts to drown on itself.
Because of existing debt?
Because the new ownership put all this new debt into it, and there's part of the story I heard was the financing to buy the team was tied to whether or not they stayed in the Premiership, and if they got relegated, this giant like $70 million loan has to be paid back now versus over in payments over a period of time. And so now they've gone from having no debt to a lot of debt to now a tremendous amount of debt that may drown them.
So the parachute payments are really not going to help a lot with that, which brings us to the most valuable and important, financially speaking, game in the world, Peter.
Yeah, tomorrow, 10:30 on ESPN+, Plus. It is Nottingham Forest and Huddersfield Town. Sorry, Luton Town, you didn't make it.
No, that would have been a good story. It would have been their first ever ascension into the Premier League, or the first tier of football.
Boy, is that the most English-sounding matchup of teams? Nottingham Forest and Huddersfield Town?
So, you know, Huddersfield Town, I think you might be more familiar with them, Peter, because they were in the Premier League for a couple seasons just a few years ago and back in the but they really knocked around between the second tier, third, fourth tiers of English football until very recently. Nottingham Forest is an institution in English football.
They're a first top tier English team and a Premier League team for a small amount of time.
They finished as high as third as late as I want to say like 99 or something, 1995, in the Premier League in the first division. They top three finishes, a lot of top three finishes, late 70s, all through the 80s. This is an institution. So for them to get, and it's been 20 years since they played first division English football. For them, if they do get back, these are the kind of teams that if they do get back, like Leeds, if they get back into the Premier League, that money that they now start to make in the Premier League with the kind of branding that they already have because of their history and the fan base, they turn that around and they make it then work more longer term. It's a little bit more difficult for smaller clubs once they go into the Premier League to kind of stay.
Mm-hmm.
But a team like Forest, like Leeds, they make it work because of their history.
Yeah, I think if there's some concern about Forest's situation is their current club is made up and bolstered by the fact that they have five loans, players on loan into the team. That's really how they kind of bolstered their roster this year. Instead of spending a lot of money, they brought in a lot of key players on loan, and whether or not they're able to keep them or replace them if they get promoted is a big question.
Well, but if you get promoted, I think Sam looked it up for us a couple of weeks ago. It's like between $150 million and $200 million. Winning this game, is that's your cash. Your new cash revenue stream that it increases by that much.
It is a huge amount of money, and it's a great game to watch. It'll be at Wembley, Huddersfield, Nottingham Forest. It's on at 10:30 on ESPN Plus. It's definitely worth a watch if you've never watched it. Champion, I said this last week. Every time I get to this part of the season and I watch the championship playoffs in the final, I say to myself, why am I not watching the championship more often?
ESPN Plus, now you get to watch Burnley.
I know,
along with Josh. there's an American playing for Forest, by the way. He's the backup keeper, but he's still on the
Yeah, the goalkeeper, Horvath, who is, I think, going to... Is he on the roster for these games coming up?
He got called up.
Yeah, so we'll talk more about the men's national team next week. But there is a game Wednesday. They are playing a friendly against Morocco.
U.S. national team you're talking about.
Here. Yeah, excuse me. The U.S. men's national team on Wednesday at 6:30 on, I think it's on Fox. They are playing in Cincinnati, a friendly against Morocco. We talked a lot last week when Tyler was sitting in with you about the roster call-ups. Zach Steffen, by the way, has pulled out. He's
personal
not going to play. Personal reasons. We don't know what that means.
Sean Johnson.
And so then they play Ecuador, on Sunday and another friendly, Uruguay and a friendly on Sunday. And then they've got two Nations League. By the way, I did this to Tyler last week. So the two games they play next week for Nations League is a tournament they're playing the first two group games for. Do you know when they play the next two group games for the Nations League?
After World Cup, I'm sure. No?
March of 2023.
Yeah.
Right. It's less crazy, almost a year from now. Yeah.
So the friendlies are actually going to be better games in a way. They're both World Cup teams, Morocco and Uruguay. They're both headed to the World Cup also. Then they play Grenada and El Salvador. We'll talk about it next week. But yeah, that's coming up for the US.
It will be very good. I know if you're a fan of West Ham or Leicester or Brighton or Wolves or Newcastle or Palace or Brentford or Aston Villa, Southampton.
Okay.
We didn't spend a lot of time talking about those. We'll talk more about their kind of end of the seasons next week. The Champions League final happening today is kind of causing content issues. There are a ton of stories that we need to talk about the rest of the Premier League season. Because Brentford is a great story. The fact that I was convinced that Crystal Palace was going to get relegated this year and they ended up in 12th place. The Newcastle story is a really interesting
thing. The new power.
Brighton ending in 9th place. Yeah. The Seagulls. Graham Potter. That's a great story. And then, of course, the Everton thing is in itself a weird deal because Frank Lampard has done it once again, taken over a club and ended almost exactly in the same place it was when he took it over at the end of the, mid-season.
Yeah.
And he did it with Derby.
Yeah.
He kind of did it with Chelsea, and he's done it again with Everton. Right, yeah. They were 4 points above relegation in 16th place when he got there, and that's where they ended.
He saved them.
He did save them.
Jesse Marsh took him out of relegation. There you go. Who was better?
Yes. What was the other thing I wanted to mention here real quick?
Was it Villa and Stevie Gerrard?
No.
Really not moving the needle either?
No, we need to. We'll talk more about that. We'll do more Premier League review and our predictions and stuff like that next week. All right, when we come back, today is the day. It is Soccer Super Bowl Saturday. The Champions League final happens in just a little over an hour on CBS. The lineups are probably out by now, so when we come back, we'll begin our preview next here on the Kick Around. It's a great day to be a football fan. Champions League final, we like to call it the Super Bowl of soccer. It's happening in less than an hour, about 45 minutes away. It will air on CBS, Big Boy Channel 11 today. Real Madrid and Liverpool, and we will spend the rest of this hour doing that. We are here filling in for Cirque du Soleil, who I think are at the Indy 500 or something like that, goofing off. Which worked out great because now we didn't have to try to do a soccer show during the biggest game of the season. This worked out very well for you and I, Andy.
So 275, maybe 300 million will tune in for tonight's match.
Yeah, this is a big deal globally. Lots of people. Liverpool and Real Madrid, this will be the third time they faced each other in a Champions League final. The first time was all the way back in 1981.
81.
Was anybody else other than you and I here in this studio alive back then? No.
No.
Liverpool won that game 1-0, and then the more recent game in 2018 was the famous Sala Ramos wrestling move.
Who scored the bicycle for Real Madrid?
Gareth Bale.
Bale.
Gareth
Bale
scored, and Real Madrid beat Liverpool 3-1 back in 2018.
We were at a watching party, broadcasting live from the Bomb Factory.
That was a great,
it
was a fun day.
It was.
I mean, other than your team losing.
Yeah, but I feel that was a game, Liverpool, which was that Liverpool side, not anywhere near as good as this Liverpool side. That game could have been won by Liverpool, and that was a better Real Madrid team than the one we have today. I think that was Real Madrid winning their third Champions League title in a row at that point. And so, you know, you got to feel good about Liverpool's chances now this year because it's a better Liverpool team and a not so good Real Madrid team, right? But
I said this a lot has happened in the mix. What's been fascinating for me as a neutral is talking to my Liverpool friends, and I have many of those. The Liverpool bandwagon is quite full these days.
Sorry about that.
Versus those are people that I know, friends or otherwise, that are fans of Real Madrid. And what is very weird is that my Real Madrid fans almost exclusively are oddly optimistic about their chances.
Yeah.
And my Liverpool friends, which, by the way, are the favorites to win this game, albeit slightly, are almost universally pessimistic about their chances.
Yeah. Well, many reasons for this. I mean, you can probably guess some of the reasons. One, history. Real Madrid, I mean, it is the most successful club in the history of the game.
Yep.
And they've won by far more Champions League game or titles than anyone else. They've won a lot recently. And so they just have that, they have that attitude, you know, you wear the crest, you wear that jersey, you're going to win. Liverpool is a little bit like, if you're a baseball fan, it's like Red Sox, you know, their history full of frustrating points throughout their history, but they've also been very successful in Champions League.
How many times has Liverpool won the Champions League?
I don't know.
Or the top European trophy?
I don't know. Is it like six, maybe?
Don't act like, don't sandbag.
Real Madrid, 13.
Okay, but it's not like, it's not like your first rodeo.
No, but I think more importantly, and really what gets to the bottom, is that, man, we thought, who did we think was that effing team in this Champions League? Somebody was like just winning games that they shouldn't have been winning. But at the end of the day, it was Real Madrid.
It really ended up being Real Madrid.
And then you're like, no, Real Madrid can't be that effing team. But man, if this run hasn't been like that.
Yeah. It's funny. They've won their last five Champions League games by a combined score of 14 to 10.
Yeah.
It has been an absolute tornado of games. They've been crazy and they've been weird.
Falling behind,
coming back to win in the most improbable of ways.
Right.
And so, yes, I do think if you look at it on paper, Liverpool is the favorite.
Right.
But Real Madrid has all these weird, intangible things going on. I mean, here's the deal. Real Madrid is starting a midfield three of Kroos, Modric, and Casemiro, which a combined age of 98 years old. I'm not lying. I know that sounds like something I would say hyperbolically that I would just make up as a joke. No, literally, those three guys' combined age is 98 years old.
Let's just take the two players that have really gotten the most attention through this run of theirs, Benzema and Modric, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those guys are like way past prime years, quote, in soccer, right? And they're still doing it.
Yeah.
And doing it at a very high elite level.
All right, let's run through the starting 11s. They have been announced for Real Madrid. Karim Benzema, who's having a bonkers good campaign. By the way, he's got like seven different records he could break for the Champions League.
Jeez.
If certain things go his way today. The biggest of which is he's currently tied with Ronaldo for the number of goals scored. Right now, if he scores one more, he'll be one ahead of Ronaldo in scoring all of those games in the course of the knockout stages of the Champions League. Vinicius Jr. on the left of him. Valverde is starting on the right. And in the middle, we talked about Kroos. Casemiro and Modric. And in the back, it's Mendy, Alaba.
Militão.
Yeah, and Carvajal over on the right. And for Liverpool, Mane up top, Salah is starting on the right, Luis Diaz, that's a story I want to talk about in another show. What a great, amazing, it's like the coolest ad to a team in some time. But in the middle, this is really the story of the game because both of these guys were such question marks. Both, not just one, but both Fabinho and Thiago are starting for Liverpool with Henderson also in there, Robertson on the left, Alexander-Arnold on the right, Konate, and Van Dijk in the middle. So it is Konate instead of Mane, by the way.
And he's played very well in Champions League. He's scored some goals in Champions League, and maybe this is Klopp just giving it to him, say, hey, you are a big part of the reason we are here, and you get the nod today. I am a little worried that both Thiago and Fabinho are starting because I don't think either one is 100%. So this is Klopp rolling the dice and saying, like, we got to get this early and just seal it. Because this if this goes 120 minutes, those guys were not going to be on the field, I don't think. I mean, obviously, we're not at training. We don't know how fit they are. But,
yeah,
I mean, this is a very quick turnaround from how they were 2 weeks ago, right? In terms of
absolutely
health.
Yes. And so my question for you is, are you surprised Luis Diaz is starting over Firmino or Diego Jota?
No, I think he's earned it. I mean, clearly the way he has been playing recently, and you're going with a hot hand. Him and Mane have been the best attackers. You know, and Liverpool has a bunch of good ones. But Diaz is a difference maker, and he was at the semifinals. Now I forget who Liverpool beat in the semis to advance to the final.
Mm-hmm.
But he had one heck of a semifinal season.
Yeah, he again, we're going to spend...
Who did Liverpool beat in the... How did I
It's
know
your
this?
Team. I'm thinking, I've got my brain somewhere else at this moment. like I said, I want to spend a lot of time in the offseason talking about the oddity and uniqueness of Luis Diaz's introduction to Liverpool in the Premier League and just how good and successful that's been, because it is off the charts unusual to happen the way that it's happened. And by the way, it's a fantastic side story in his background and everything. As a Liverpool fan, are you pleased with this 11? Are you like, is this the 11 you would have put on the field if Klopp had called you and said,
Andy, who should I start today?
Yeah, it was Villarreal, by the way. Yes, this is an ideal starting 11. I mean, provided everybody's fit, and with Konate, you take it into account that he has been playing Champions League matches. Mm-hmm. But I just have the worry that the health worry. But who are your options for Fabinho, for Thiago in the midfield? I mean, do you then go with Milner? Do you go with Keita? I think I trust in Klopp, as we have, Liverpool Nation, because he has always been pulling the right strings, and he knows what he's doing.
All right. People have asked me multiple times, how do I think this game's going to go? And you can get into, Andy, all sorts of individual battles. The biggest one I think a lot of people are talking about is Trent, yep. Arnold Alexander, and Vinicius Jr.
Yeah.
And there's been some history, like last year in the quarterfinals, Vinicius Jr. really gave Trent problems.
Yes.
Was reading a lot of different tactical stuff, James Wilson had a really interesting take on this, but I'm going to try to put this in a very concise package. I believe today's game is going to come down to one thing and one thing only. It's going to come down to Liverpool's press and Madrid's ability to break it. Because if Liverpool can successfully press and convert that into opportunities, I think Liverpool could win this game easily. But if Madrid, and again, this is where Kroos and Modric specifically are so good, if they can break the press just enough to create those opportunities to take advantage of all that space.
Yeah. And that's where Vinicius can get behind, and he's so dangerous behind. The issue for Vinicius, and it didn't play out as I hoped it would have last season when Real Madrid played Liverpool, and Vinicius really, really took it to Trent, is that if he can be forced to be more defensive, because remember last year though, Trent Alexander, he was not having the same season that he's having this year. He had an off year last year.
Well, also had a different pair of defenders at center backs last year in the quarterfinals.
If Alexander Arnold can do what he has been doing this season, then that'll be a problem for Real Madrid.
So Jonathan Wilson was talking specifically about this and how people criticize Trent for not being a good defender, but what they don't talk about is his job as that particular role is to press in and attack and cross balls, mm-hmm. which takes him out of position. The thing that tends to break down for Liverpool in that scenario isn't him leaving space behind. It's that the press isn't doing its job to cover up, to prevent a Kroos or a Modric playing that immediate ball out. So if Liverpool's press isn't working very well, and those two guys in particular are able to play balls to Vinicius mm-hmm. or to Benzema or in this case Valverde, then the break is on. And that's where I think if you're watching this game closely, specifically early, because everybody's got energy, everybody, mm-hmm. Liverpool are going to come out and push. And you will be able to tell pretty quickly how this is going to go in terms of Madrid's ability to break that down.
Yeah, no, again, we go back. Modric is going to be key also, and he's been so good in this run. Benzema, though, ultimately is the wild card, and he's the one that is getting these goals out of. I mean, how do you defend Benzema? That's the issue.
Well, it's funny because we talked about the fact in the last game, Benzema Benzema had this amazing game and scored all these goals, but then in the follow-up game, up until the very last waning minutes of the game, he really didn't play very well or was missing opportunities that typically he had been scoring through the course of these knockout stages. So, look, he's an old dude too. Who knows what is going to happen in terms of all? I think the part in this that we should say to everybody in terms of a preview is that, unlike many times we come into these previews and we're like, oh, this is going to be a great game. But in the back of our minds, we're like, well, you know, it's probably City's just going to blow somebody out. But in this one, you can make all sorts of arguments as to why this thing is shaping up to be an all-time great final, which, of course, means it's going to be a turd. But it's got all the elements for a recipe of greatness.
Yeah. And you have both holding mids, Fabinho on one side, Casemiro on the other. Both contenders to start as holding mids for the Brazilian national team in this World Cup. They're both playing in this game.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that we haven't talked about that I do think maybe benefits, not maybe, does benefit Madrid, is the fact that they've essentially been on neutral for the last few weeks because they wrapped up La Liga. They have been resting players. They haven't had the pressure that Liverpool's been having to go into.
So if there's one reason why I would give Real Madrid the nod, other than the mystique and the badge and all that we're talking about, that counts for something, is that very fact, is that they've had the luxury of resting guys. And Liverpool has been having to try to get the title away from City.
Well, right. And part of the fact of going through that effort and playing an FA Cup final has been a little bit of a tweak to Salah, the issue to Thiago, the issue to Fabinho.
Van Dijk.
Yeah.
They're all not 100%.
Yes. I think if you were to take everybody on equal measure, Liverpool is a massive favorite. But because of all these little weird
practicalities, when you think about those things, it's a very even game and maybe slightly advantageous to Real Madrid.
Yeah, for those who aren't big European finals watchers or Champions League watchers, the history of this tournament is filled with times where, on paper, English teams look better than their European counterpart in this match. But because the other team, whether it be Italian or Spanish, come into the game being able to rest players and have wrapped up their league, they end up winning these games because the English team has, you know, been spending the weeks prior to the game battling it out. That's happened multiple times in this tournament before, and it could happen again today, for sure. All right, we are going to take a break and come back and talk more about the Champions League final. Liverpool-Real Madrid kickoff at the top of the hour on CBS, and we'll talk more about it here next on The Kick Around. It is the glorious, beautiful sounds.
Have you read the story behind this song?
Of the Champions League theme.
Do you know the story?
I don't. What is it?
That the guy that wrote this is still receiving royalties and is like filthy rich. Because every time anybody... anytime...
The champions!
Anytime this game is broadcast, any part of the world... They all play this, you know, as...
Is there a better sports theme?
As bumps into music, into advertising. And this guy just, you know...
Just cha-ching.
Yeah, like a dime every time they do that.
His iPhone has like a cha-ching sound that plays every time. The ticket right now is throwing in some money into that dude's pocket.
Yeah. Who knows his name? I have it in front of me.
What is it?
Tony Britton.
Well, congratulations, Mr. Britton. This is... Maybe other than the NFL theme, the greatest sports theme of all time.
Which NFL?
That's a good question.
Which NFL? Are you talking about the Fox?
No, CBS, the actual NFL one. The da-na-na. I don't know. Anyway.
No, please.
I don't have time. No, I got to do other things to do. Stop it.
No, we got time.
No time for this. The main NFL theme. Isn't there like a main NFL? In my head, there's a...
You're talking about the...
The one the old NFL films used to play
all the
time.
Yeah, but there's like 12 of them. That was a series.
That's not all one song mushed together?
No, there's like 900 million of them.
Yeah. Well, they're all good.
There's about 12 good ones, yeah.
Yeah, there's about 12 good ones.
All right, now you've ruined it for me.
All
right, so by the way, I need to give everybody an update to our good friend Lars Sivertsen, who, as we announced last week, was in the hospital after falling in his home and not just breaking, but gruesomely breaking his leg. And he was home alone, and he had to drag himself across the house because his phone was upstairs.
What about the Malamute? Did the Malamute not help?
Poor dog just, like, apparently was not, didn't know what to do. He had to holler. He's been in the hospital all this week. They've been waiting to operate. He sent me the x-rays, and they're not.
I'm going to take my headset off.
They're unattractive. Well, no, I don't worry. Okay. He broke both his tibia and his fibia. Well, no, I'm just telling you, the medical, and a bone in his ankle. So they're waiting. They've been waiting for the swelling to go down. So he's still in the hospital. Yeah. He's currently now, they keep delaying it. Now I think he's having surgery on Monday.
Okay.
I will just share with you. I've asked, we can't have him on the show live, obviously, because he's on oxy right now. But his prediction he sent me is that he thinks, he said, I think Liverpool are a significantly better team and should win, maybe even comfortably.
Wow.
Mr. Swift.
We should trust his predicting. He's done quite well with his predictions. Real Madrid has Ancelotti on their side.
All right.
We haven't spoken about him.
No. We'll save your and I's prediction for the end of this segment because the mix is next. Yeah. So this will be the last segment. Real Madrid-Liverpool kickoff in about 20 minutes, a little over 20 minutes. It will be live on CBS Big Boy Channel 11. If you're a streamer, it is on Paramount Plus. It is in Paris. I read somewhere today, somebody reminded me. Now, this game was moved from
St. Petersburg, I think it was,
from
right?
Russia for obvious reasons, but it was originally actually scheduled for Munich.
Oh, really?
And maybe because of COVID, they moved it from Germany to Russia, and then because of the war, from Russia to Paris.
Paris is a good neutral site. I mean, both the English and the Spaniards can get there equally easily.
Now, something to watch. And I only read this because the media picked up on Jurgen Klopp's comment. They just reinstalled the field less than 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. They tore the grass out, laid a new pitch, as they call it over there. And Jurgen was commenting about how it may look good, but it doesn't play very well. You can see the seams.
That also favors Real Madrid. All these little things that we keep mentioning.
You see this, how this is going, Sam?
No, I'm just telling you. All
it just
these
never
little
stops
things
with him.
Favor the underdog. This is how underdogs, you know, gain steam in these kind of things.
Noted underdog Real Madrid, yes.
Right, yes. It's crazy. I know. It's crazy, but they are on paper the underdog. Not in my book, Sam. Not in my book. Did you know, Peter, that Ancelotti is going, this is the manager, the Real Madrid, the very good Real Madrid manager. And Sam, you know Ancelotti, right? Yeah.
Unfortunately, yes.
He is going, if he wins today, this will be his fourth Champions League title as a manager, more than Klopp, more than Pep.
But he doesn't have five European titles like one Jose Mourinho, who won the European Conference League.
And
probably ran around the stadium holding up five fingers.
Point is, Ancelotti also knows what he's doing. And he doesn't, you know, I mean, yeah, he gets credit, but he really doesn't get the credit, you know, like we give Pep and Klopp credit, right? Or Mourinho, who you just mentioned.
No, and he does it in such a weird, cool manner.
Player's coach also.
He's absolutely a player's coach. I was sitting here looking at the starting 11 and going through, because, you know, you always do that thing where you compare players and say, would this guy start for the other team? And you look at the two goalkeepers, Alisson and Courtois. I think Alisson is the better goalkeeper.
Yes, of course. Yes.
So if you come down to penalty kicks, I think there's an advantage there. So then you look at the center backs. I think, so Van Dijk is so good. But is one Van Dijk and a Konate better than Alaba and Militao, however you pronounce Militao?
Yeah, Militao. Yes.
Okay.
I would say.
All right. So then you get your fullbacks, Robertson and Trent versus Mendy and Carvajal.
Yes.
So now look, you're checking off Liverpool right there.
Yes. But now we get to the midfield.
Okay. Casemiro, Kroos, and Modric.
Yeah.
Fabinho, Thiago, and Jordan.
Yes, so I would say current form, the run in Champions League, and health, I would give advantage to the Real Madrid midfield.
Even though that is a collective age of 98.
It doesn't matter. They know what they're... Okay. Those guys
know let's exactly go to the front of the line. You got Mane, Luis Diaz, and Salah.
Yeah.
up against Benzema, Vinicius Jr., and Valverde.
Yeah, on paper, Mane, Salah, and then Diaz, who's been the wonder kid. Yeah, great trio up front. But look at what Benzema has done. And Vinicius Jr. is probably, you know, when you count league games, their top player, top two player?
Yeah.
Right?
What I would see, what I would say, something to keep an eye on, and depending how the game goes, if Madrid is chasing, I think you could make this argument, whether they're holding a lead or chasing a lead, the ability to throw in Camavinga and Rodrigo to really add some young energy into that team late and really change the dynamic of the team is something to think about versus what Klopp can do. Now, Klopp's got a good deep roster, too.
He does. The problem is, again...
His depth is almost in older guys. Yeah. The depth of Madrid is some young, dynamic players, and real up-and-comers.
Yeah, and he's used it expertly.
Against City in particular. Yes. That was part of the whole City thing, was you know throwing Camavinga on the field and really changing the game.
Brilliant
so that's something
timing.
To, yeah.
So, you know, the effing team, the crest, the history, the mystique, the confidence they have, Ancelotti making all the right moves. The field.
Who's going to be the star
of
the game?
All these things are pointing to Real Madrid. Who's going to be the star of the game? Well, this leads into my prediction, if you want to hear it.
Okay, yeah.
My prediction is that it will be a much closer game than Lars thinks. It'll be relatively high scoring, 2-2 perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think 3-3, but maybe 2-2. It'll go to extra time. And if Real Madrid scores in extra time, they win it in extra time. If it goes to PKs, Liverpool will win. So do I predict...
That's not a prediction.
Okay, Real Madrid will score. Benzema will get a crazy goal in extra time. And Benzema will be the MVP because he scores that goal. Yeah.
3-2? Okay. 3-2 with a Benzema goal in extra time. Mm-hmm. Deep into extra time?
Sure. Yeah.
Very
Real Madrid
like Grimsby style.
Yeah, because maybe not that deep, but you know, it's just following the story. Their storyline is insane.
It is.
Look, we haven't even reviewed what they did to get here, which is a great story, right? I mean, really quick.
Real Madrid had a much tougher road to hoe. Yes.
Yes. Who they beat along the way?
Everybody. PSG.
PSG, Chelsea, and City. Coming from behind, everyone.
Yeah.
Every one of those series.
Yes.
Look who they beat. Liverpool beat Villarreal and another team from Portugal.
See, now you're turning the tables because this is the thing that Liverpool haters are like, oh, Liverpool's only here because they got to play crummy teams.
I'm just saying this is the storyline for Real Madrid. Who do you have?
I've thought about this a lot, my friend Andy, and I do mean this genuinely. Because I do think this game is going to be electric and a lot of fun to watch. I hope that we haven't jinxed it and it turns into 90 minutes of potato mash mush. I do hope it's good. I do think it will be good. I do think it'll end up, I think 2-2 is a very fair prediction at the end of 90 minutes. I do think it goes to extra time. I think that 30 minutes is going to be wildly bonkers. Both teams may score, both teams may not, but unfortunately, I do think it goes to penalty kicks.
Oh, you do?
Yes. And that's where, Andy, my good friend, I give Liverpool the edge, and I think Liverpool win on PKs.
I feel good if
Liverpool
to
totally won Europe.
I feel good if it goes to PKs.
So that's my prediction. L pool on penalty kicks.
Real Madrid.
And you're predicting your own team loses in extra time.
I've just
to
named
Kareem.
Nine reasons why the underdog.
And I'm the Manchester United fan on the show.
He's a graduate of the Bob Sturm Academy of Sandbagging over here. It's an impressive. He's magna cum laude, no less.
By the way, all I know is this entire show he's been texting somebody, and I have a feeling it's one Bob Sturm.
Hey, he's on a flight to Seattle right now.
Did you know that Ancelotti was coaching Everton and decided to leave to coach
Real
Madrid?
I cannot wait for Madrid to beat you 5-0 today. I want no happiness for you. I want nothing but suffering.
Okay, I hope everybody enjoys the big game today. It is at 2 p.m. On Channel 11. It should be great. That'll do it for the kick around. But P1s, we love and adore you. Go on out, get stuck in, and win your 50s.